Siren Radio.
Quite right too. Now, it has to be said, if they're feeling a little bit low, a little bit under the weather after the result against the USA yesterday, and despite the fact that Alex Morgan did a wonderful sort of cup of tea impersonation, cup of tea, the good news, Nigel, is at least they've got the Great Yorkshire Show to look forward to when they come back.
Indeed.
Yeah, so what's not to love about that, for goodness sakes? Everybody's a winner from that point of view. We welcome to the studio Leicester City supporter and postgraduate student Fergus Jeffs. How are you, Fergus?
I'm very good.
Marvellous. Fergus, I don't think you've... Have you been to Yorkshire, let alone the Great Yorkshire Show?
Not the Great Yorkshire Show. Been to York.
Been to York?
Yeah, I went to...
Not to the Great Yorkshire Show.
No.
Well, I mean, where do we start, Nigel, with this particular... I mean, you've got sporting soprano Lizzie Jones performing in the main ring. You've got sculptor Emma Stothart. You've got, as we said, the 10th anniversary of Café Fodder. And, of course, following on from last year's Craven Heifer, an interesting name, which probably could be a punk band back in the day, the Craven Heifers. You've got another wow installation. That, I mean, Nigel, it's literally just one thing after another, and a royal visitor on the Thursday as well. I mean, you've just pulled out all the stops, haven't you?
Well, we do spend all year organising it, and so we want people to feel that there's so much to do. There's something for everybody, from fashion to, you know, we're really well known for the livestock classes, but there's a top grade fashion show which we've put a lot of extra effort in this year, so people can see it. Machinery, as you say, there's just a vast array of different things to come and see.
It is phenomenal, and the Cuoni catwalk is going to be bigger and better. I mean, I haven't spoken to Bernadette Gledhill. Is she sort of excited by the whole thing, or is she just having lying down in a darkened room somewhere?
I think a bit of both.
Yeah.
She's very excited because, I mean, we realised that the fashion show was so popular, not everyone could see it. So we've moved it next door so more people can get in to see it, and spruced it all up, and it's going to be absolutely top notch.
Well, I mean, it always is. So when you go topper than the top notch, it's like going to 11 when the amp's going up to 10, basically. It's amazing. Now, in addition to that, of course, we've also got some interesting media news from our colleagues, because Channel 4 Five are going to be there for a couple of evenings between 8 p.m. and 9 p.m. where they'll be doing the highlights with the imaginatively entitled Today at the Great Yorkshire Show. They must have worked long and hard on that number, Nigel.
Yeah, well, I think it's to the point.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, we're looking forward to that.
It's going to be good. I mean, for so many years, I actually thought, you know, there's so many filming opportunities from the Great Yorkshire Show. We know that by the socials and so on. But in this whole range of things, it's just great stuff there. Fergus, any questions for Nigel about life, the universe, how the Duke of York will be welcomed? Obviously, just like the Great Yorkshire Show welcomed his mum, his dad, and various other folk over the years, really. But where would you like to go?
In order to, like, hype the Great Yorkshire Show, what is the thing you're most looking forward to at this year's event as one of the organisers?
Mm. Well, we just love putting on the show because it's our chance to show the world all the good things about food and farming that Yorkshire's got to offer. And, you know, the enthusiasm of the people who turn up, you know, all the work and effort you've put in is rewarded by their reaction. So it's not one thing. I mean, there's just a great buzz for the 3 days, and it's I enjoy it all, really.
And this giant installation that Emma Stothart from Whitby, of course, is going to actually be putting together now. I mean, we'll be hopefully be there for the press preview day on Monday, 12
I hope so.
But yeah, exactly. So, I mean, any sneak previews as yet in terms of this celebration of the 10th anniversary of what is not only a sustainably, environmentally friendly farm shop, which was basically ahead of the game in so many ways? I mean, you know, I seem to recall when the announcement was made, back in 2007 or 8 or so, that you were going to actually build fodder and it was going to work through that. People thought, oh, yes, yes. I mean, now it's a case of, you know, it's a no-brainer. It's obviously that everybody's trying to get in on the installation side of things.
Yeah. The reason for fodder was when we did surveys, we obviously do visitor surveys of people who've been to the show, and the thing that came out as most popular was the food hall, which obviously has a big emphasis on regional Yorkshire food. And so we thought, well, how can we actually deliver that year-round rather than just over the 3 days? You know, people obviously like what they're sampling. And so that was how fodder was born. And as you say, the rest almost is history. And I think we've now got over 300 suppliers, the vast majority of whom are from Yorkshire.
Yeah, no, indeed so, and we look forward to connecting with many of those who'll be obviously showing their wares throughout the whole piece. I do know that Emily Hartley is really excited by this. Emily's actually doing a work placement with us. She couldn't be here this evening because she's actually laying fences, I believe, being fence laying. She's the sort of person she actually is. She's doing a broadcast journalism course and lays fences. Why not?
Yeah.
She was a Young Musician of the Year, Nigel, so yeah, best not go there. It's just it's a sort of things that people actually do. But in terms of that, you know, the food, the specials from that point of view, let's talk about briefly sporting soprano Lizzie Jones, together with her 4-year-old twins. They'll also be there as well and doing a range of things with Heavy Forces, I believe.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, it seems it was one of those things. Last year was actually the first time we'd had a singer in the main ring, and but she was so well received. I mean, I'm not making any promises, but it was a very, very easy decision to invite her back again, because I mean, she was absolutely fantastic, and as you say, she knows us a bit better, we know her a bit better, so she's doing a bit more this year, so it's great.
Now, we did say last year we weren't going to mention the B word at all. I think it is being mentioned in various ways. I think there are a couple of people who are actually vying to actually step into 10 Downing Street who have probably been mentioning it as well from that point of view. Is that something which, in a sense, you think, OK, we know it's there, we know it's around, we're going to have to deal with it, nobody else knows what's actually happening? Or is it one of those little irritations you could say, Lord, I just wish they'd get it sorted?
No, although we obviously the whole idea of the Great Show is that it's a celebration and a platform for the industry. There's no doubt that the situation over Brexit and funding is at the forefront of farmers' mind. Hopefully, they'll have 3 days where they can enjoy themselves and leave that behind. But we are, you know, like a lot of people, we want to know what is going to happen, and because farming is a long-term business, and it's very difficult to plan when all you're being told at the moment is things are going to change, but there's no detail on what they're going to change to. But there's a lot of, you know, we've got Robert Goodwill here, who's the farming minister. So there's chances for farmers to meet politicians and sort of get their message across.
Yeah. Of course, I say my outside bet is that Robert Goodwill will actually see sense and invite yourself and Charles Mills to effectively take over the running of the country. But that's, you know, it's a thought, you know, we work on that basis. It's a way forward. But he will actually be connecting or arranging things. I think he's around on Tuesday. It's good to know, actually, what one sense that actually Westminster are at least showing once again interest, and they appreciate that at the end of the day, post-Brexit, there I've mentioned it, you know, we are going to be so dependent on our agricultural area. It's just untrue, really.
Yeah, I mean there's sort of, sometimes we talk about farming as though it's sort of this business, but actually it provides the food that we eat.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it is a vital thing. It's not a sort of add-on or an entertainment. Yeah. It's a sort of thing we all eat 3 times a day or more, and so we need a productive, efficient and profitable farming industry which looks after the land and delivers the food that we all need.
We're going to be speaking in a few moments' time to Zoe Jameson, who is a student vet who also works for Drew Barry in her spare time. She's recently at the Royal Highland Show. She was connecting with us at the recent wonderful horse trials that we actually have at Bramham from that point of view. And I have said, actually, you know, Drew Barry really should be at the Great Yorkshire Show. They claim they're there as a sort of franchise with various other bits and pieces, but I think, you know, it's there. Zoe, you're missing out, but we'll say that in the fullest of time. Can people still get tickets, though, for this grand event?
Yes, there's tickets. I think they're certainly they're still available online.
Excellent.
You can still pay on the day as well, of course.
Even so, more
yeah, yes, it's, yeah, you will. You're more than welcome to join us and have our great party next week.
It's a great party at the Great Yorkshire Show.
It is.
You'd think we had rehearsed this, really. I mean, yeah. Over the years, I feed you the lines, you deliver them. It's exquisite. It's wonderful.
Yes.
GreatYorkshireShow.co.uk. I think you know what the last two questions are. Hopefully Fergus remembers them as well. Fergus, would you like to deliver them to the Chief Executive Officer soon, I'm sure, to actually have a knighthood, because he deserves it, let's face it, after 10 years. Over to you, please, Fergus.
Nigel, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
It's always interesting talking to you and learning about the show. And what's the interesting thing is some people, you obviously haven't been to the show, so we try and get across some of the magic and excitement and hopefully enthuse you to want to visit.
And that's what we try and squeeze the juice out of every second of these phone links. And, of course, the audio postcards that we provide when we're actually there. In fact, you can go back, Nigel, if you're at a loose end, you know, play back the last 10, 15 years of our coverage of the Great Yorkshire Show. You know, just fancy working through that. It's all online and there.
I might do that, but I'm concentrating on this year at the moment.
I would have thought so. So the next question, Fergus, is...
Will you be joining us again in the future?
Sorry?
Will you be joining us again in the future?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, of course I will. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And I'm hoping to see Alex on Monday.
We will catch up with you, Nigel. It'll be awesome. Time for Unit 4 plus 2.
You to me are sweet as roses in the morning. Soft as summer rain at dawn in lovely shade. That's something red. The sidewalks in the street, the concrete and the clay beneath my feet begins to crumble. But love will never die, because we'll see the mountains tumble before we say goodbye. My love and I will be in love eternally. That's the way. That's the way it's meant to be. Around, I see the purple shades of evening, and on the ground, shadows fall, and once again, you're in my arms, so tenderly, the sidewalks in the street, the concrete and the clay beneath my feet, begins to crumble, but love will never die, because we'll see the mountains crumble, before we say goodbye, my love and I. Meant to be. The sidewalks in the street, the concrete and the clay beneath my feet begins to crumble. But love will never die, because we'll see the mountains tumble before we say goodbye. My love and I will be in love eternally. That's the way, that's the way it's meant to be. That's the way.
Of course, the real reason that England were unsuccessful last night, Faye White. You see, it all set to do another interview with her yesterday and geared up. She was ready to go. We were ready to go, etc. In the end, gazumped by Victoria Bedarbyshire at Radio 5 Live. I knew then it was going to end in tears, and so it proved. Anna, were you one of the millions who was suddenly sucked into the BBC's promotion of this awesome tournament, which, of course, England are now failed in?
No, I'm not interested in sport in any manner,
not
shape, or form.
Oh, no, exactly. A complete sort of step away from that whole basis. So the tears, the tragedy. Anywhere in London that you felt were being particularly, you know, taken aback by this, or was it just a case of, no, once again, it's just creative framing. That whole play up at Battersea Park only had about six people in, but they used CGI to actually manifest more.
Yes. It's nice to be out and about. So, yes, Not that.
There we are. Never mind. So where are you now and what are you doing?
Well, it's very lovely and sunny here in London, and we're in Austerley Park, which is the National Trust property, which is absolutely beautiful. If anyone is in the area, it's well worth a visit. Plug. Well, it's absolutely gorgeous.
That is your official line as our Midweek Drive Southern correspondent from that point of view. So feel free to plug away from that perspective. Mm. Actually, Fergus, what was the last time you were in London?
I think it was for the Olympics and Paralympics. Because remember, I went down for the Olympics to see the Olympic Park, and then I managed to get tickets to... see the Paralympic athletics, got to see Richard Whitehead in all his glory.
So, 2012.
Yeah.
Literally, well, 7 years ago.
I'd been before on, like, family holiday and saw the sights, but so maybe three times, but not in a while.
You see, sometimes going from the wilds of Leicester to a big place like London, even though they begin with the same letter, it can be quite a journey, really, from that point of view. I mean, it's just part and parcel of the whole sort of rich scenario there. I noticed that you were sharing memory of having happy times with cousins in Italy in terms of the Facebook package, which is nice, as well as celebrating various other bits and pieces. So, are you a keen National Trust follower?
To be honest, I defected and I joined English Heritage, but my friend joined National Trust, and we're sort of mixing and matching at the moment. So she wants to see an English Trust, I can take her as my guest, and she's taking me as her guest with National Trust. So we're kind of, it's a bit mix and match. We both got Q membership, which is quite handy for us and our friends as well, so it works out very well.
You might say mix and match, others may say playing the system. I don't know. It's just a way to actually sort out some kind of sense and sensibility about the whole life game and so on. Had confirmation that Zoe Jameson will be joining us, which is good. Tessa Snart will be joining us to talk about a festival she'll be attending over the weekend. And we'll be hearing from Robin Pearce, who is currently, like a vampire, his own words, not mine, staying in the indoor environment, basically psyching himself up for the midweek drive. Given that his own podcast has reached episode 6, I believe now, it might even be 7 of Piercing the Veil, with a special cameo appearance by his dog this week, which was very impressive, actually. It was staged, because Robin effectively says, "Boo!" And Bo immediately thinks he's referring to him and starts barking. Still, never mind. How he could actually sort of have a top 3 graphic novels without mentioning God Loves, Man Kills, or the death of Captain Marvel, frankly, I'm still stunned by. But never mind, we'll find out, and that's a part of the programme. Have you any questions you want to put to our sole co-host today from the point of view of Midweek Driveouts? Why, you might well ask. Well, Ben's in London. I don't know what he's doing down there. Working, I believe. Probably ignoring requests from your good self to go off to sort of hook up at Kew Gardens. Who knows?
Yeah,
there's that. Clearly, other folk have actually headed off into a whole variety of other bits and pieces. And I think Bethany is travelling in the Far East now. And yeah, I know, it happens. So, anything you want to say to Fergus about, what life is like as a postgraduate slaving his way through his dissertation, which I believe he's just working on, as a plane flies overhead, to allegedly say, "All's good, all's good." Don't worry, noise pollution. I believe that Johnson is the man who's going to sort this all out. He said he'd actually arrange that, that's what he said. Yeah. So you can rely on Johnson to do that. Anyway, over to you, Anna.
Okay, Fergus, how do you think your sort of postgrad is going? I mean, do you have any long-term plans to use it in a future career?
Well, the reason I chose, because I remember when I, because previously I'd done a English degree here in Lincoln, but I didn't want to pigeonhole myself because I don't know if I want to change what I want to do as a career. But I decided to use journalism because that's kind of something I'd wanted to do since I was about 10 or 11, I think. Because I think it was just when the only reason we got the weekly local paper, the Leicester Mercury, is that, they told me later on, is because I just read the sports pages because I was such a big sports fan and I would talk to them endlessly, I think, until they got sick of it. And then I became interested in film as well. That's where I took the film journalism course. And I would like to. I'm thinking about which area I'd like to go into. Obviously, being on the shows opened radio up to me. I've done a few radio things. Doing a little bit of print, do a few kind of online reviews, a little bit of a blog going. Making sure I've got a few irons in the fire.
So 21st century, isn't it, Anna? The youngsters today, they have their blogs, they have their profile. Do you know there's even a feature that we'll talk about on the programme tomorrow about how it has been stated by no less a personage than Tom Holland, currently to be seen as Peter Parker in Spider-Man, that ultimately you go into the Spotlight casting directory and the first thing that any prospective agent will actually ask you is, so how many followers have you got on Instagram then? And if you're not in the thousands, forget it, basically. You know, you're building... You might have actually studied acting. You might have actually become a really important actor and developed in your own way. Study the craft. Mm-hmm. If you ain't got the followers on the socials, you can forget it.
Anyway,
that's by the by. Don't worry, Anna. There will be sanity at the end of the tunnel, even though we haven't mentioned the Great Yorkshire Show with you, because I know you're not going to be able to make it this year. Maybe next year.
Maybe next year. Absolutely.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I certainly have. Thank you. Yes, I have.
And now that the planes have calmed down, or maybe you've just moved indoors, you know?
No, outside.
That's good. Will you be able to join us again in the very near future?
I'd love to. Thank you very much. They didn't know where he was gone, but they knew where he was, wasn't it?
Seems that Rossum's Universal Robots back in the 1920s, well, set the scene for a whole variety of automation and so on. Big question of the 21st century, of course, is should robotic education be mandatory in British school? We're just heading into UK Robotics Week beginning, and a fifth of British folk believe that robotics should be part of UK syllabuses. Now, a gentleman who we're delighted to actually welcome to talk about this particular research and more is the awesome Professor Guangzhong Yang, CBE, Chair, of course, of the EPSRC UK RAS Network. Good morning, Professor Yang.
Good morning.
Now, this particular research in terms of robotics, which many people, I think, if they think about robots at all, they might think about the cinematic visions of R2-D2, C-3PO and so on. And of course, they're there after a fashion, but robots are, like them or fear them, becoming more and more a part of our everyday existence.
Yes, absolutely. That many people are using already, robot vacuum cleaners at home, and some are using robot lawnmowers. And in medicine, the robots are already assisting surgeons for performing minimally invasive surgery.
So, in order to address this issue with respect to technology, and as the human species obviously deals with the advantages, the positive sides of robots, is it important then to ensure that actually robotic education is just as much a part of school curricula as physical education and indeed other forms of reading, writing and arithmetic?
Yes, so we're delighted that from the response of the survey that everybody thinks that the importance of robotics and how do we need to work this into the school curriculum. And in fact, robotics is very much multidisciplinary. That it has a very firm grounding on core subjects such as math, physics, chemistry, and also bringing biology, for instance, that a lot of robots, how do we learn from nature and to perform what we call the bio-inspired design, and all these are part of robotics. So robotics is very hands-on, and also, people can really link all these different subjects, perhaps that using this, working to the school curriculum with problem-oriented, learning, and to really explore the basic science, and also to explore how basic science will help us to develop future generations of robots.
Now, Dr. Yang, you're obviously director, co-founder of the Hamlin Centre for Robotic Surgery at Imperial College London. That's just one example of how robots, clearly within the health industries, can be very much critical to the whole side of things. Should we be afraid of robots? Should we actually sort of be concerned about the much-mooted singularity, which always seems to be like 20 years away from the notion of artificial intelligence? You know, it's 20 years down the line when basically, the tipping point will be reached, etc. Or is it a case of actually, if we understand these things, we'll know pretty much how they actually function and operate?
Yes. So one of the key elements that we are addressing in this year's Robotic Week is that about the legal ethical issues for the use of robotics. As you know, for any technology that inappropriate use will have undesirable effects, and we need to really understand implications. So there are vast, number of different issues we need to address. So the purpose of Robotic Week is really to showcase the current technological advances, to understand its implication, how and when it's coming, what is really, remain a science fiction, and what will become reality, how this will change the future education, how this will change future employments.
We started off the piece by talking about, obviously, Karel Čapek's stage play, which had an intrinsic effect on, obviously, Rossum's Universal Robots. That was very much written at a time where clearly ideologies were at work. We were talking about master races, slave cultures, all manner of kind of revolutionary aspects from there. If I can ask you, Professor Yang, what would you maintain in the 21st century are likely to be the next big breakthroughs in robotics? I mean, we'll be having sort of robotic carers, robotic assistants. Can we conceivably actually look forward to the first human-robotic, personal relationships happening?
I'm not sure about the last one, but certainly robots will become ubiquitous. So in our workplace, at home, and what we really want to see is really human-robot work seamlessly together. So, there are certain things robots are very good at doing, repetitive tasks, accuracy, precision, and so on. There are many things that humans are doing very well, unlikely that the robots will surpass decision-making, the cognitive powers. So how do we work together? And you're absolutely right that and there will be a lot of robots that will be using them in our daily life, for instance, for the elderly. How do we develop those wearable robots that are not those big exoskeletons, but those subtle, soft exoskeletons that can be worn under the garment and to help with the musculoskeletal power to maintain independence?
And I suppose being somewhat satirical at the moment, one might almost say that given the current state of geopolitics in the world, many politicians could easily be replaced with robots and they'd probably do a much better job. But that's another line to talk about in another day. Looking ahead in terms of UK Robotics Week, so it's becoming embedded into the culture. Are you finding that more and more people are excited by the future, or is there a sense of fear still?
I think they are. That, there are concerns that this is largely due to communication, misunderstanding of how the technology, is advancing nowadays, and also what are the actual implications. So the purpose of UK Robotics Week is really to bring people together to explore the technical advances, to understand where we are, and also to also help the scientists to understand what are the public needs. So this communication, I believe, is very important. And we have 165 events going across the country, and all these are published on our website, ukras.org. And you can really, find out what's going on and really be engaged, because it's only when we can hear from everyone that how to shape the technical development, and also that the responsible use of the technology that will make this robotics to be better fitted into our future society.
In terms of popular culture, I've always had a fondness for the Robbie the Robot character from Forbidden Planet, and also Wall-E. I think that appeals to me as well for various other things. What, do you have any personal cinematic or televisual favourites yourself, Doctor?
I have many, so I try not to be biased.
So that makes perfect. And we haven't even had a chance to speak about androids, and that's a different line entirely. Maybe that'll be for the 22nd century, who knows? For the moment, though, Professor Guang Zhong Yang, many thanks indeed. Just a quick reminder, if people want to find out further information, presumably simply go to ukras.org/roboticsweek.
That's right. Thank you so much.
Many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Bye.
Save a bit of power. He got 50,000 watts in a big acoustic tower. Security's so tight tonight. Oh, they're ready for a tussle. Better keep your backstage passes, 'cause your promoter had the muscle.
And so it goes,
and so it goes,
and so it goes,
and so it goes. The way it's going, no one knows.
And so it goes.
And so it goes,
and so it goes,
and so it goes. But where it's going, no one knows. In the tall building sit the head of all nations, worthy men from Spain and Siam. All day discussions with the Russians, but they still went ahead and beat all the plans. Now up jumped the U.S. representative. He's the one with the tight eyes. 747 for him in that condition, flying back from a peacekeeping mission.
And so it goes,
and so it goes,
and so it goes,
and so it goes. But where it's going, no one knows.
And so it goes,
and so it goes,
and so it goes,
and so it goes. But where it's going, no one knows.
And so it goes,
and so it goes,
and so it goes.
But where it's going, no one knows.
And so it goes,
and so it goes,
and so it goes,
and so it goes. But where it's going, no one knows. But where it's going, no one knows. But where it's going, no one knows.
Oh, where is it going? Tessa Snart knows. Where's it going, Tessa?
Hello, I think it's going all the way to Andor, where I am right now.
That's the important thing, that's where it's going, because tomorrow we're having a special Sound and Country Vision Independence Day epic. You started inviting people to this about 2 weeks ago, Sasha. That was amazing.
I think I did.
Yes.
I was in advance of this one, I thought I'd start. Getting it out there quick.
On the case. That's the important thing. On the case. And so it will be. Not content with what's going to be an absolutely awesome show. Can you tease ahead? You know, what is the listener going to actually access tomorrow at 7 o'clock on Siren Radio?
Yes, I can. So we've got two really, really good interviews. One with a country rock duo, Big City Filter. So that's Julie and Roland Cote will be speaking to. And also, I think probably one of the biggest interviews to date on Sound and Country Vision, with quite a popular country, the sort of alt country alternative band, Juju and the Lion. And they'll be chatting about their brand new single with Casey Musgrave.
It's just amazing.
So that's quite
exciting.
Amongst great music and a bit of Martina McBride's Independence Day as well. So. We'll have to look forward to tomorrow.
Exactly. And if you're sort of thinking, well, that's all well and good, but I've got things to do at 7 p.m. on a Thursday evening. I'm doing all sorts of things. We had Glastonbury over the weekend. I can't access. People don't need to worry, do they, Tessa? Because there is another way in which they can access the whole programme.
There is. They can access the programme via the podcast, through Southside Broadcasting.
.podbean.com. Go on Facebook, check out Sound and Country Vision. You will see the programme moving into its second quarter century of productions, phenomenal.
There'll soon be
30 shows.
So I'm working on the next two as we speak.
Now, a young man who, I'm not sure what his views on country are, but he certainly was fascinated by the documentary on Diego Maradona and really liked the movie Yesterday, recently featured. And I'd say, okay, even though Richard Fitzwilliams hasn't reviewed Yesterday's yet. And what's he doing tomorrow? He's doing Don't Look Now. Amazing. and he's going to New York next week. It's a way forward. But you were also watching Glastonbury, Fergus, I believe.
Yeah, I was.
So what were your highlights of Glastonbury, which I'm sure will not be a patch on the delights of festival that Tessa will be attending over the weekend, which is Dixie Fields. But anyway, apart from that, Glastonbury?
Well, I think we've got to give credit to the band that closed it, The Cure, who, even though Robert Smith is, I think he's 60 years old now, still sounds like he's 25, incredible, hasn't lost his voice. Mm-hmm. All the
hits
were great.
Just because you're heading up to 60 doesn't mean you lose everything.
No, but normally when you hear, take Elton John, he's had to adopt that faux American accent.
Bruce Springsteen, on the other hand.
Yeah, Bruce Springsteen's nearly 70. Good, yeah.
He's still arguing with Paul McCartney.
Kylie, I think, was pretty entertaining for us. The crowd loved it in that kind of Dolly Parton.
And she loved
the crowd. She loved the crowd. She was very overwhelmed.
The crowd loved her, and she loved the crowd. What about yourself, Tessa? Were you hooked on Glastonbury? Is it a case of far too few country music tunes there?
Sheryl Crow was there.
Yeah, Sheryl Crow was there. No, I love Glastonbury. I mean, although obviously country music is, I love it. I like all genres. I'm interested in it all. So Glastonbury for me is great because you get that mix from country to pop to indie to everything. So I thought The Killers was really good. I caught that show.
Nothing not to love about Brendan Flowers and his boys, really. It's great stuff there.
No, I thought it was really good. Really, really good. I watched a lot of interviews and a lot of clips from Instagram. So, yeah.
But would you go there? I mean, obviously, both yourself and Fergus have experienced it virtually through the licence fee funded organisation that we know as the British Broadcasting Company. Would you actually go there if you're not actually being booked to actually host it? Which, of course, you should be, Tessa. In fact, frankly, I'm just astonished they haven't actually been on the phone already and say, Tessa, can you do Glastonbury 2021?
Wouldn't that be a dream? I would love Joe Wiley's job. I think it would be great to experience. I mean, I would do it. I'm not sure. I'm not a huge fan of camping, but I think you've got to camp to have the whole experience. I think it would be difficult in the heat we've just had.
But then, at the same time, would you advocate the kind of hailstones they've had in Mexico? You know, cool you down, but you never know. And presumably, Tessa, you would be a veteran glamper as opposed to a camper. You'd be glamping, really, for the whole
thing. I've never glamped, but yes, I probably would edge more that way, I should think it's probably a tad more expensive to do. I know, have you seen the cardboard tents that they've been promoting? I've seen a few of
environmentally sound.
Yeah. But I know there's arguments for and against that because I guess people really should just pick their tents up and take them home and recycle.
Have you got any views on Billy Fyres? Not that you're from Essex, but do you remember Billy Fyres from the early days Essex? Or is it a case of, no, she's never crossed my line at all?
I can't say I watch it. I have heard of her. I've seen sort of adverts on the TV, test show.
Well, I'd like to take you around to a little Billy Fyres interview we did earlier today, in which we're talking about roughage, OK? Now, I've got to say, partly, and I'll let the listener make their decision on this, there are moments where I think the company will thank the Lord that they had a nutritionist by Billy's side for this particular one. We'll get a little musical intro, which I think is perfectly suitable. I think it's quite nice. It's twee, it's not too sort of sense, but it'll work through. And hopefully, Tessa, give you something to amuse yourself and then listen to this, come back to us afterwards, okay? So stay online.
Okay.
Now, with recent news suggesting that more than half of us in Britain actually wrongly believe that fibre is a protein, and over 86% of UK adults admitting that they're not aware they should be consuming their recommended daily allowance of 30 grams of fibre, clearly help is needed. And so we have wheeled out two specialists in this field. First of all, the Renaissance mother in so many ways, from The Mummy Diaries, it's the fabulous Billy Fiers. How are you, Billy?
Hi, yes, I'm really good, thank you, and you?
Excellent, very good indeed. And we also have Ace, nutritionist and expert in terms of matters to do with fibre, no doubt, Sue Gatenby. How are you, Sue?
Hello, very well, thank you.
Sue, if we can turn to you first, this whole notion that many of us believe that fibre is a protein is one big problem, but then not being aware of how much fibre we should be consuming. Why is fibre so good to us, apart from good bowel habits?
Well, if you look at the research which has driven the government to actually increase the fibre recommendation recently, it suggests that those who eat diets which are high in fibre are associated with a lower risk of chronic disease, that all those nasties that we get as we become older, such as coronary heart disease, some types of cancer, and type 2 diabetes. So clearly it's an important component of a healthy, balanced diet, along with many other things, of course, but it is important.
Now, Billy, with your particular lifestyle in the media and hosting and a whole range of other bits and pieces, clearly there are issues when you're raising a family as well that tie into this. So how do you actually ensure that your own family, and including yourself, actually get this healthy and balanced diet?
Yeah, like sometimes it can be quite difficult because, you know, I am a busy working mum, and, you know, in the mornings when I'm running out the house on the school run, I don't have time to have breakfast. So, you know, with Tropicana's whole fruit range, like, it's just so easy for me to grab a juice and, you know, then I do know that I'm achieving one of my fibre a day. And, of course, it's high in fibre. So I think small things like that can just really help me out when I'm busy and if I haven't got the time to sit down and eat a meal. And even with the kids as well, you know, they really enjoy it. It's really tasty. So, yeah, it's just, I think, to have a good balance is most important.
Well, as you rightly say, Tropicana launching a range of high-fibre drinkable fruit. Sue, just turning to your good self, because there is a bit of a track record here in terms of drinks that are put forward as being wonderful and nutritious, and then you find they're packed full of sugar. They're hopeless for you. Sugar is the new nicotine. Hopefully that isn't the case with this.
So Tropicana whole fruit is 100% fruit juice with fibre. So we're scooping at Tropicana more of the fruit into the glass, so to speak. So it incorporates the fibre that otherwise would be missing. Obviously, all the sugars in 100% juice are naturally present. So we don't add any sugar to these products at all.
Well, that's good to hear, because otherwise we'd have a whole new range for that. Probably you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. Billy, from your own perspective, is this something, I mean, have you tasted it? Would you actually say, yes, this is great? Is this a sort of situation where we turn around and say, actually, it does help in terms of actually coordinating all the family's nutrition habits and so on?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've been drinking it, you know, the last couple of weeks in our house, and the kids love it. You know, I've been really enjoying it. Even this morning, I was up and out early, and you know, I drank one on the way to here. So, yeah, I think it's just, you know, it's a really good way of getting one of our five a day in all of us, like the whole family.
And just going back to yourself in terms of the nutritional aspect, Sue, let's just talk a little bit about, you know, why proteins are not fibres and why fibres are not proteins.
So our diet is composed of many different nutrients, vitamins and minerals, which are obviously essential in the diet, fats, carbohydrates and protein, which tend to deliver the calories in our diet. And then fibre, which is obviously the old word for fibre, is roughage, which is very important for our long-term health. So I think the challenge is that nutrition can be quite confusing, and there's a lot written about nutrition, but basic education amongst consumers seems to be lacking. Labelling can help that. Front-of-pack labelling can help consumers understand the nutritional value of products. But obviously, I think that basic education is probably missing from our schools these days. So it is difficult, but we try to make it easy by developing products which are nutrient-dense. So instead of kind of counting the calories, we should be making the calories count, making every calorie that you consume more nutritious. And with Tropicana whole fruit, we've really focused on that by delivering more of the nutrition of the whole fruit into the glass.
Billy, presumably you're aware, obviously, the five pieces of fruit and veg a day from that point of view. Did you sort of follow through this with fibre, or rather like the rest of us, where you just say, I don't know what fibre is and fruit, it's a totally different world for me?
Well, obviously, 30%, only 30% of us are meeting the minimum of five a day, and less than 10% of children, in fact. And 90% of us aren't meeting the fibre recommendation. So actually consuming a glass of whole fruit can help deliver on both of those really important public health challenges. It's a small portion size. It's 150 mils, so it's exactly the amount that counts as one of five a day. So as Billy says, it just makes it easier, if you like, to meet those rather complex dietary recommendations in a very practical way.
Exactly, that was my point. I mean, Billy, when we were first talking about this whole system, was that something which you thought, oh, I don't know, I mean, we want the best, but sometimes you get confused by the amount of stuff that's actually out there?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I was slightly confused, but, you know, obviously it's just such an easy way of getting one of your five a day in you, and, you know, it's high in fibre, which is very important.
Which is the best way forward. So where can people go to find out further information about this Tropicana product, and indeed what we've been talking about today in terms of why fibre is important for us all on a daily basis?
Well, we have a lot of very good information on our website, which is tropicana.co.uk. And I'm sure Billy will probably be writing about nutrition in her social media.
Well, I was thinking that might be fairly critical from that point of view. I'm thinking maybe The Only Way is Tropicana could be a series we could look for, or possibly The Only Way is Fiverr. You know, it's a way forward. Billy Fires and Sue Gatenby, many thanks indeed. And healthy eating, ladies.
Thank you.
Oh, I was so tempted to actually ask Billy about her concern about Philip Schofield, who apparently was slammed by Billy over the rude questioning that Philip actually employed for quizzing her over wedding costs. But I thought not. I thought, what would Tessa want me to do in this particular instance? And she clearly would have said, no, don't, for goodness sake, don't ask her about their wedding costs. Lord above. Still.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
A whole new world. Billy Fires. Any comments, Tessa, before we go on to talk about your next festival?
Yeah, no, I thought that was a really interesting interview, especially to do with the protein and the fibre, and I didn't realise that Tropicana combined the two. Yeah. I was aware of fibre. I know you need it. I used to eat a lot of fruit and fibre cereal. Mm. I don't know how natural that is.
Not very, but never mind.
No, I don't really eat that anymore, but I eat a lot of fruit now. I try to have fruit in the morning rather than anything else.
This is good. We all like to keep living just so that we can keep entertaining people. Dixie Fields.
In moderation.
Exactly. We could talk about the Mason-Dixon line. We won't. We'll talk about that another time. But Dixie Fields, why are you going to be checking out this brand new country festival and probably getting stacks of interviews for subsequent editions of Sound and Country Vision?
I am going to try and get interviewed most definitely and hand out cards to try and get more artists on the show. But it's brand new. It's in Essex. It's actually the field where the Bee Festival was held. So it's the same grassland. And it's brand new, and they kind of promote independent music as well as established. Lauren Elena is headlining, and Ward Thomas is going to be playing. And they, of course, have played at the Engine Shed in Lincoln. They're very big now.
Did you see them, by the way? I've just cutting across to Fergus here. Did you see? Okay. Did you see the Pierce is the wrong one. Sorry, I'm thinking about Robin Pierce and his family, well-known singing songs. Ward Thomas?
No, but I remember when I listened to Radio 2, they were really heavily promoted by them and on Bob Harris's country show, which I used to listen to. And
Bob Harris wouldn't be a patch today without Tessa Snott.
And they're very good musical duo, definitely.
It's words that Bob Harris said about your good self, Tessa Snott. You know, in case Tessa Snott, she's a legend. Actually, he whispered it because he was whispering Bob Harris.
Yeah, well.
Lucky enough to meet him, and he was very, very nice. Got a brief little chat.
Let's just rephrase that. He was lucky enough to meet you, Tessa.
He's fantastic, and what he's doing for country music is great. So, Ward Thomas, actually, they're supporting that Wildwood Kin when they performed at the Lincoln Engine Shed. Wildwood Kin were at Glastonbury this year. They were performing on the smaller stages, so they're very good too.
It's been awesome. And you can have more awesomeness with Tessa Snart and friends tomorrow on Sound and Country Vision. And you can listen to the podcast afterwards as well and do all sorts of other bits and pieces. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chink with us today? A sort of chink of light that's sort of worked our way through that. Has it been okay for you, Tessa?
Oh, most definitely, as always. A lot involved.
Well,
about a lot.
Planning.
A lot of tea time chat.
Exactly. So back with us again in the very near future?
Oh, I'd love to, yes.
Whee!
Thank you.
And now here they are, the most daredevil group of daffy drivers to ever whirl their wheels in the wacky races, competing for the title of the world's wackiest racer. The cars are approaching the starting line. First is the Turbo Terrific, driven by Peter Perfect. Next, Rufus Roughcut and Sawtooth in the Buzz Wagon. Maneuvering for position is the Army Surplus Special. Right behind is the Ant Hill Mob in their bulletproof bomb. And there's ingenious inventor Pat Pending in his converter car. Oh, and here's the lovely Penelope Pitstop, the glamour gal of the gas pedal. Next, we have the Bowlermobile with the Slag Brothers, Rock and Gravel. Lurching along is the Creepy Coop with the Gruesome Twosome. And right on their tail is the Red Max. And there's the Arkansas Chugabug with Luke and Blubber Bear. Sneaking along last is that mean machine with those double-dealing do-batters, Dick Dastardly and his sidekick, Muttley. And even now, they're up to some dirty trick, and they're off to a standing start. And why not? They've been chained to a post by shifty Dick Dastardly, who shifts into the wrong gear. And away they go on the way out wacky races.
You see, quite clearly, that's the theme that DuBarry should actually have every time they head up to a country show or a CLA fair. That's away they go, because I like a blinding spotlight of Damascus-like conversion material. It struck me, Zoe Jemison, that you indeed are Penelope Pitstop. You know, quite clearly, that's the. All you need is to actually put in, when you next speak to Charles, forget gnomes, for anything else, whatever, just actually ask the word help, in a kind of southern accent, you know, southern American sort of antediluvian accent, and it will be there. It's the key thing. It's help, and suddenly you'll see the profits for DuBarry just going through the roof. Not that they need to in any case, but it's part and parcel of the thing. Zoe Jameson, welcome.
That's you, and I'll have to give it a go.
Welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Good. Yeah, okay. I mean, so I keep forgetting that, of course, despite being an ace student vet, soon to be graduate vet, don't worry, she'll be fully qualified by the time she's set loose on the animals. You're also obviously working with DuBarry during the day and so on. So are you actually in the centre of London now, or are you kind of elsewhere?
I'm not. I've actually just finished university for the day.
Oh.
So no DuBarry work today, unfortunately.
Well, that's better to actually focus on the Penelope Pitstop nature of your inner character. Now, you're far too young to remember the original series, but are you familiar with the character Penelope Pitstop?
I am vaguely.
Vaguely. 63 yeah. seconds now to hopefully sort of give you a full sort of insight into the whole thing, and you'll be able to see how, if you see Charles as the hooded claw,
okay.
With a maniacal laugh, it'll all click into place, or maybe not.
Okay.
Here she comes.
Help! Help!
The perils of Penelope Pitstop. Starring those seven rollicking rescuers, the Ant Hill Mob, their courageous car, Chugaboom, and that villain of villains, the Hooded Claw. Penelope Pitstop, heiress to a vast fortune, is in perpetual peril from her fortune-seeking guardian, Sylvester Sneakley, who, unknown to her, is really the Hooded Claw. But foiling this fiend's foul plots are Penelope's ever-present protectors, the Anthill Mob.
I'll get you, Penelope Pitstop.
You see what I mean, Zoe? You see what I mean? It's there, isn't it, surely?
Sounds like quite an adventure, yeah.
Exactly. We could be the Ant Hill Mob from Siren Radio with Chug Boom and a whole range of things supporting you against that fiendish Sylvester Sneakley and his alter ego, the Hooded Claw. You know, I'll get you, Zoe Jameson.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure Charlie will be too pleased with his description.
I don't think so.
But well, maybe. I'm not sure he'll be a fan of that one.
Maybe it's a work in progress.
He's much nicer than he sounds.
Yeah. It could be a case, but then you see originally Sylvester Sneakley, quite a nice chap, and then suddenly he saw his other side. So, only kidding. Exactly. Right. If not, we're on your side. That's about it. So, Zoe, are you coming to the end of your final? I mean, have you got finals looming? I mean, what's the situation in your life and times as a student vet?
So we are currently doing our rotations, and then so we finish. It'll be this time next year. Our graduation will be probably this week next year, actually.
Wow.
So exciting time.
This is good. Fergus, of course, did you graduate last year? Was it this time last year for your first degree?
Yeah, it was last September.
And then, of course, postgraduate work and that's there, exactly.
Things like October.
Life comes in and another year goes by and it's just a... Have you got any ideas in terms of whereabouts in the country the animals are going to be blessed or the beasts are going to be blessed by your presence, Zoe?
Oh, I'm not sure yet. We've got a year to make up my mind.
And I use that term because I was once informed by a countryside correspondent, a chap called Lou Bevin, fine chap, handlebar moustache. His uncle actually set up the health service, Nye Bevin. Anyway, Lou Bevin actually said that country folk actually refer to animals not as animals but as beasts. Or was he just actually sort of pulling my leg to a certain extent?
I mean, I think he might have been pulling your leg.
Did he? Yeah. Maybe it's a Yorkshire thing. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
It's the Great Yorkshire Show next week. We were speaking to Nigel Pulling. I promised Nigel that we'd mention the Great Yorkshire Show to yourselves, though. He was devastated when I had to point out that you weren't able to attend this year because Du Barry have an arrangement with Brocklehurst. I don't know. maybe next year when you've graduated, you can come and join us on our coverage of the Great Yorkshire Show.
That'll be fun.
Well, exactly. We need more Zoe Jameson on location. In fact, ZJ even, for our American cousins, ZJ on report. It's nice.
That's quite good. From a location near you.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be worthwhile just for that. Fergus, any questions that you'd like to put to Zoe Jameson, who, frankly, as I say, she's knocking the bar ever, ever higher, week in, week out. She's relentless since she first actually sort of demonstrated her quality and we managed to write the whole notion of her being referred to a gnome because according to somebody who was the hooded claw in disguise, she reminded him of being a gnome. You know, we've gone past that, way past that. You know.
So what made you decide to become a student vet? What made you decide to study?
Or indeed a vet, really.
Or become a vet.
A student vet is not really a career.
It's not really a job. But I mean, what made you decide to study veterinary studies?
I suppose as a kid growing up, we all were always outside. I just enjoy spending time with animals rather than people.
Yeah, Lord knows that's so true. I mean, you know, at least you know where you are with an animal. I mean, if you know, they look at you, you know, whatever the species, and they might sort of think, you know, they don't quite understand. But there's that fundamental sort of sharing of humanity and our animal cousins that we just need from that point of view. And clearly, you wanted to help animals, which was important.
I was probably quite foolish in my expectations because every animal has an owner, so you don't actually escape people.
Yeah, but then again, you know, who owns us as human beings? You know, I mean, it's a different line entirely. We are shortly going to be heading into, obviously, the CLA Game Fair land. When does that take place and where will you be and what will you be doing as far as the Game Fair is concerned with Du Barry?
Yeah, so that's the last weekend of July and it's in Hatfield House this year, which is really exciting. It'll be the second time that they've held it at Hatfield. So that'll be good. It's nice and close to London, so I suppose it's a bit of a different crowd from sometimes the different
Game Fair. I don't know. I mean, we follow the Game Fair through parts of Warwickshire, Leicestershire, even say back in the Yorkshire in times past, and it's do you get a chance to actually do any particular activities there, like fishing or angling or any of the other things? Was it a case of no? When I'm actually at the Game Fair, I'm representing Du Barry, and I'm on the stand all of the time.
Yeah, we don't have much spare time, especially at the big shows, but we're up for anything. So, yeah, if we get...
That's why you've become a weekly radio correspondent. You know, this is the whole thing. It's just opened up a whole range of things from that point of view, and the world is a better place as a result for it. And any particular summer trends that we should be looking for, Zoe, in terms of fashion routines, or is it a case of, frankly, tweed is always in fashion?
Yeah, I mean, I think tweed is always in fashion. And we've got a nice range of spring-summer clothes from Dubai, so that's always worth a look, isn't it?
Do you know, I mean, the way we've actually cross-promoted that burger company, I think you should actually put in for a raise straight away. It's been awesome. You know, people thought earlier when we were dealing with Burley Fires about the joys of Tropicana and fruit and fibre, that was positive. But, you know, I think we've again, just raised that bar substantially. Zoe, it has been awesome as ever. So, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Absolutely.
And
I'm off to listen to the Wacky Races.
Do you know this? We could, I mean, just for the moment, I mean, we could, of course, sort of follow through with the joys of Dick Dastardly. I mean, were you familiar with Dick Dastardly and Catch the Pigeon?
Yeah, I have heard of that. Maybe I'll do some research.
Well, just to help you on the way, here's 65 seconds before we actually find, we ask you that second question.
Muttley, you snickering, floppy-eared hound. When courage is needed, you're never around. Those medals you wear on your moth-eaten chest should be there for bungling at which you are best. So stop the pigeon, 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 ow! Nab him, jab him, tab him, grab him, stop that pigeon, now! You, silly, stop sneaking, it's not worth a chance, for you'll be returned by the seat of your pants. And Clunk, you invent me a thingamabob that catches that pigeon or I lose my job. So, stop the pigeon, 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 stop the pigeon.
Of course, the Midweek Drive would like to disassociate itself from any form of cruelty to pigeons because they are not, as former Mayor of London actually referred to them, tree rats. They're also sort of feathered friends that we've come to know and appreciate.
We're going to have lots of pigeons in the vets at this rate.
Exactly so. You know, nab him, stab him. You know, this is not good at all, really. Despite the fact that the original series was set in the First World War when pigeons were obviously used to carry messages from one side to the other. Hence, you actually had to stop the pigeon. Still, never mind. Zoe, the final question. Will you be back with us next week?
I'd love to.
Yay!
CV has taken you from St. Agnes in rural Cornwall via washing dishes right the way through to working within antiques, fitness training, and indeed graduating from the wonderful UCL London University. We're delighted to actually sort of say that there could be no better person to actually start addressing the whole issues about modern dating techniques and so on than the awesomely talented Hayley Quinn. Good morning, Hayley. How are we?
Good morning, Alex. I'm surprised you know so much about me. That makes me feel very flattered.
It's very important because this whole notion of the changing scene with respect to dating in general. Now, clearly, you can go directly to HayleyQuinn.com and find out a whole range of activities, including how you managed to work undercover as a blog ghostwriter for characters from the New York Times bestseller The Game, which was quite interesting, I would have thought, from the point of view of thinking, I can't believe men are actually dealing with this kind of line for women, etc. But what then is the key sort of element when it comes to modern dating milestones? Is it a case of, yes, if they're sharing passwords, it must be serious?
Well, I think what's interesting is, I think rather than commitment being one sort of big act, like, let's say, going to the altar and getting married, I think modern day commitment definitely breaks down into a series of really interesting milestones. So Match put out some stats around commitment and what that actually means. It's all sorts of things from being Netflix exclusive, which basically means that you are no longer watching that Netflix show by yourself. You have to watch all the eps with your significant other, to being another very modern form of commitment, which is, I think, after about 16 months, being invited into the family's WhatsApp chat, you know, the true sign of acceptance. So what's really interesting, I thought, from this research is it demonstrates that it's not that commitment doesn't exist. It's just in modern days, I think our milestones around commitment have shifted and people are expressing their commitment, their partnership in slightly different ways.
16 months, apparently, is the crucial time when people might get invited into the mother-in-law group chat. And that's the moment where you can say, yes, I am now established.
Yeah, exactly. And then 17 months, I think we're moving in. So it's all happening at that point in time. And there's also other things where I guess it comes to, you know, expressing more, I suppose, for want of a better word, emotional intimacy, like the point where finally you're okay to talk about one another's bodily functions, which helpfully does come before you finally move in together. And I think it's, and also that moment where you're actually okay to sweat it out in the gym. And I think what's good about this, or what I like, is I think there's a lot of press, or there's always so much stuff saying that, you know, commitment doesn't exist, or nobody wants commitment anymore. And I actually really don't think that's true. I still find, generally, when I'm meeting people and working with people, that people still want the same things. You know, they do want meaningful connections. They do want to find committed relationships. But perhaps how we're going about it has just changed.
That certainly seems to kind of be part of the whole system in which technology is actually there. But as you said, everything from personal hygiene habits and so on, toilet habits, of course, 327 days, 11 months. It's a way forward, I would have thought. In terms of this research, Hayley, that Match.com actually put together, were there any other relationship milestones that effectively kind of appeared in the survey which you say, actually, yeah, this is a critical side of things? I mean, you mentioned the gym, etc. Is the joint calendar one, for instance?
I think the joint calendar is about, I guess, having that transparency. And I think when we look at these milestones, whether it's meeting someone's parents or, you know, being the WhatsApp chat or sharing the joint calendar, a lot of that is actually about showing like a welcomeness and an openness to being comfortable with sharing your life with someone. And I guess for the people out there who might be looking for that really committed relationship and maybe thinking, well, actually, you know, this is my year where I actually want to find something really meaningful, a very, very good indicator that, about whether someone will be open to that are around how open somebody is with you and how transparent. So you should really be looking out for someone right from that get-go. For instance, if you do match and you form, you know, you meet somebody online, you should be looking out for someone who's messaging you regularly, who's available to hang out on the weekends, who seems interested in meeting up in real life and sort of actually getting offline. All of those are those very early indicators that someone is turning up from day one, ready and willing to build that relationship with you. And I think for people to actually focus on looking out for those relationship-building qualities early on is a really good way as well to filter out who you should be investing your time and your efforts into.
I was quite surprised to find that even a few years ago, pre-2013, female dating advice had been limited to wait for your Prince Charming to sweep you off your feet.
Well, I'm not a fan of, you know what I'm a fan of instead, rather than waiting for Prince or Princess Charming?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of us all kind of like taking a bit of personal responsibility, which means, you know, rather than waiting for our one destined partner to come and, like, you know, slay a dragon or something and find us, instead I'm much more in favour of us going, okay, look, if I really want to have a relationship or if I want to meet people, what do I have to practically, what are the actions that I have to take? You know, what do I have to be doing? What's the commitments I have to make to myself in order to go out there and meet someone?
And do you think a sense of humour is actually vital as well, that sometimes if you become obsessive about this whole sort of things and become a kind of whatever your gender happens to be, whatever your particular choice of partner happens to be, sometimes less is more, you need to ease back sometimes?
Totally. I think you've got a relationship guru over there beginning. I think that one of the most important things is to keep our expectations in check around relationships. You know, sometimes you meet someone, you have a great 1 to 3 dates, they really, you know, impress you. But that doesn't necessarily mean that person is going to be the one who's going to be the person that's impressing you, you know, a few years down the line. So I always advise people just to keep your feet on the ground, actually not to get swept away, and instead to kind of take a bit of, to be patient, take your time to get to know someone, because I think those really great qualities for commitment in terms of being very consistent, being respectful, constantly showing effort into the relationship, by the nature of them, you just don't get to see them in the early dating stages. So I definitely advise not to judge too harsh and too quickly, and instead to actually give things a go and wait to see how someone demonstrates their effort levels towards you.
HayleyQuinn.com would be one place to go to. Presumably Match.com would be another for further details about this particular survey, Hayley?
Yes, that's exactly right.
And just in case people are slightly confused, do not confuse Hayley Quinn with the character played by Margot Robbie in the Suicide Squad movie. It's a completely different area and a totally different area entirely, as we've said before. Hayley, it's been a delight, as ever, sharing some thoughts with your good self. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I've had an amazing time. Thank you for the relationship tips as well, Alex.
Well,
it's been awesome.
Well, in which case, Hayley, we look forward to hopefully connecting with you again in the very near future. Take care now.
Awesome. Take care. Bye.
We like to provide some kind of value for money in many ways. Relationships, very important, particularly interested in that 11-month relationship scenario. Hopefully, we'll be able to connect now with our award-winning television director, Graham Harper. Are you with us, Graham? No. I had a feeling he wouldn't. That's why I didn't give him the usual massive, huge, big build-up from that point of view. Maybe it's just a case of the relationship didn't actually go beyond that 11-month or 327-day scenario when you can actually start discussing bodily functions. Too much for me. Possibly too much information. But there we are. Hayley Quinn, dating expert. Does that resonate with yourself, Fergus? I don't want any personal information here, but just in terms of ways forward. And I mean, you've just seen a wonderful romantic movie. You suggested Yesterday was a classic one from that point of view. Would you say that there are certain sort of key areas there? And one of the big milestones, of course, is when you set up a joint calendar after 15 months.
Well, I've known of the joint calendar before, but I guess it is pretty logical, really, because I suppose in order to really connect with someone, you have to kind of start sharing a lot with each other instead of just personal stuff, basically sharing your lives together.
Wow.
I suppose. I mean,
very, very serious.
I'm no expert myself.
Well, you know, it's just a way forward.
A lot of mine comes from cinema.
Whatever I say, you take on big trouble and have to pay. So windy weather, it's so windy. Loves you. It's easy to say it, but hard to do. Before you can raise a good family, you have to make love in harmony. So in there,
tantalisingly, toe-trippingly terrific. Even though it is nearly 50 years old. A band from Manchester. Even Graham Harper might have heard of them. The Tremolos. Have you heard of them, Graham?
I'm afraid I was part of their line. Yeah, I remember them on 1966 on Top of the Pops.
Yeah,
when
exactly.
I was working there.
I mean, you know, they had so many moments. Silence is Golden and Halule, Halule, La La La. And yet they didn't work into their lyrics there one of that crucial elements that we found out from our relationship expert, Hayley Quinn, that ultimately you know that things are getting very serious when you actually decide to discuss bodily functions with your partner. Apparently toilet habits are shared as topics of conversation in a relationship after 327 days. 327 days, Graham. Was that roughly the time it took yourself and Bernadette to start saying, so who's going to use the lav, love?
No,
exactly.
and
you don't have to answer, and we wouldn't expect you to, but I just thought, wow, what sort of world are we in? Did you watch?
That's right.
Yeah, it is, exactly. Much as we had hoped to actually put you together with Russell T. Davis for the Telefantasy Conference, but sadly Russell can't make it either. I don't know. We're trying our best here, but give us something to work with on that basis. Moving on. Graham, where are you today?
I'm sitting on top of John Lewis's tea bar.
Oh.
So it's kind of rooftop tea bar.
Very good.
It's very nice.
Yeah, well, it's only the very best penthouse suite for Mr. Harper and family, I have to say. Very good. And did you actually avail yourself of the Women's World Cup, or was it a case of, no, I've seen Alex Morgan, and she's a fine tea drinker, but ultimately I know it was going to end in tears as far as Phil Neville was concerned.
I didn't know it was going to end in tears. It was a fabulous match, and I think decisions were a bit odd against the Brits, but there we are.
A bit odd? Surely VAR doesn't make odd decisions. It's a computer and a machine. It can't odd decision.
No, I thought that it was a bit, it was a messy. I don't know how they could sort out whether there was a foul or not.
Mm.
And then the goal that was disallowed was a very, very marginal. It was really tight. Not because it was a British girl who... was trying to score.
Wow.
I would have said the same for anybody. They were two very dodgy decisions to me. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you could work out with VAR the faults, but there we are. They did.
Well, exactly. And we can look forward to battling against, my prediction, probably Sweden for the bronze medal.
I don't think so. I think you're wrong.
No, I have a feeling Sweden will be in the bronze medal, and it'll be the Netherlands who will actually sort of thrash the tea drinkers from the United States of America. But, you know, that's another little line. Fergus, did you follow the game at all? Because obviously we had Faye White on the series the show last week. She was going to join us again this week. All was set up, as I said earlier. We were gazumped by the BBC. She got a better offer from BBC Radio 5 Live. Can you believe it? You know, I'm sorry, but if she'd only stuck with us, the Lionesses would have been through. I shall say no more. Fergus?
Yeah, I did follow it. It was I suppose, heartbreak after heartbreak, really. I mean, the VAR decision, then the late penalty.
But you say that, and yet, as I was going to say to William Coles earlier, I mean, there was a huge seismic roar from north of Hadrian's Wall. Everybody there was finding it hilarious. You know, social media alone was saying, yay! But we have to point out, Graham, I know you're partly Scottish as well, that clearly Scotland also managed to have the usual traditional tragedy without even qualifying through the first round. But never mind. certain things are like, it's a predictive, wonderful routine that just goes on and on and on and on. I don't know where it's going to end.
One day
we'll be there. I used to say the same as Manchester City supporter, and all turned out well there. So that's the key thing. Fergus, any questions you want to put to Graham about, I don't know, what he's doing? I mean, we actually got here Graham Harper, award-winning television director with more thoughts on the state of the nation. This is because, Graham, I believe that actually looking at the state of our current politicians, we need your input as soon as possible.
Think? You mean me as a politician?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you've dealt with sort of interesting dodgy actors over the years. No names, obviously. but I'm sure in the way forward you could also open up a few activities. Anyway, Fergus, any questions?
I know, obviously, we're known for his directing episodes of Doctor Who across both...
Coronation Street.
Coronation Street. When you came back... in 2006 for the revival of Doctor Who, what were the things that you were most obvious to you about how the series had changed from when you were working on it beforehand?
Definitely because it was done single camera, so now we were making like a film is made, which meant that every shot could be thought about very carefully and lit properly and whatever, whereas with multi-camera studios in the 80s, you were lucky if it all looked great at all. So you could really put lots of pace onto the episodes just by covering lots and lots of really well-crafted shots. That was the thing that I really loved.
Makes so much sense. I'm going to give you a little quiz, actually, Graham, sort of musical quiz, unless the line drops out, which you could do at any time now. Can you actually remember which TV classical series little number actually was? It's kind of like Guess the Intro in so many ways, and we've used it before, and somehow I feel you probably won't have any difficulty whatsoever in identifying it again. I mean, I might be sort of having, you know, a lot of positive thoughts about this without, you know, any sort of real key from that, but would you be ready and willing to actually take this little take the musical test and see if you can identify which particular series this little number actually comes from?
Yes, go on. I'm dying to hear.
Good. But actually, I say TV series, it was something completely different there for the moment, but you know, in fact, the machine itself has decided to actually replace the system by saying, oh, we'll go for a different series entirely. You might have thought we hadn't had the rehearsal on this, honestly, Graham, but still, it'll happen. It will happen as long as we have faith. That's the key and aspect. Those are the sounds of a presenter who's effectively sort of having to fill because he's waiting for his particular choice of music to manifest without it coming through. It's kind of like going behind the scenes to the whole sort of sequence, and you know, it still hasn't sort of come through that. So clearly, Graham, the gods are on your side. I have got an alternative though. As ever, an alternative. Barry Maguire. Have you ever heard of Barry Maguire? He had one hit in the 1960s. I would like you, given this line with respect to the appreciation of contemporary lines, etc., to see how close Barry Maguire actually was in terms of his prediction for The Eve of Destruction.
Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fears I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save. We're the world in a grave. Take a look around you, boy. It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me. So mad, feels like coagulating. I'm sitting here just contemplating. I can't twist the truth, it knows no regulation. Handful of senators don't pass legislation, and marches alone can't bring integration when human respect is disintegrating. This whole crazy world is just too frustrating, and you tell me. Yeah. said China, then take a look around to Selma, Alabama. You may leave here for 4 days in space, but when you return, it's the same old place. The pounding of the drums, the pride and disgrace. You can bury your dead, but don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbor, but don't forget to say grace and tell me.
Or is it all just a matter of perspective? What say you, Graham Harper? Are we on the eve of destruction?
No.
No, exactly.
No.
That's what we'd like to hear. It's that kind of positivity that actually will help us through a whole range of things. And that's brilliant stuff. And we appreciate that. Would you like to have that little quiz in terms of identifying which particular musical series was the theme to? I mean, I think you'll nail this within the first 30 seconds, honestly.
Oh, I'd like to have a go.
Any thoughts? Surely. Feel free to...
Oh, it's got to be...
Yes?
Got to be Doctors or Vets.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I can give you...
Vets.
No. Dr. Cameron?
Ah, that's right, yeah. Dr. Finley.
Dr. Finley's casebook. Exactly. And it was because it was so easy that clearly the system decided to say, oh, yeah, we can't insult Graham with his sort of musical little delights in terms of that, which has been not on at all. So what sort of things will you be doing over the summer, Graham? Will it be a case of you'll be opening up a whole range of other elements and factors, or are we still working on the Western?
No, I'm not working on the Western. I'm looking forward to hopefully going to Romania to do a bit of research into a film project I'm involved with. And then a bit to go to France to set to enjoy the sun.
Excellent. Well, remember to wear sunscreen. That's the important thing. And
absolutely.
And would this Romanian project possibly be featuring the awesome Philip Herdwood in a production kind of role?
It certainly will.
This is what
he's definitely
like
going to be producing it, and he's also going to be starring in it.
You see, that's the kind of win-win situation that the world needs more of, which is excellent stuff. Graham, we've interrupted your high tea at the top of the penthouse for quite too long, so I'm going to ask Fergus to put the last two questions to you because his microphone's up and ready. I will actually sort of gear myself up for Robin Pierce and his critique of the programme. And it's nice to know that we're in total agreement with respect to Spider-Man Far From Home, except I wasn't quite willing to actually do what Robin did, which is he loved it so much, he went and had a meal and then went back with his family to see the whole thing again in 3D. It's great.
My God.
I know. I mean, a good movie, yes, but not necessarily go to see it twice in the same day. But never mind. Fergus.
So, Graham, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Hello. Hi, Fergus. Yes, thank you very much.
And will you be joining us again in the future?
I look forward to that, yes. Thank you very much.
Very formal. It's a bit like when Trump actually meets the leader of North Korea, you know, in that DMZ, demilitarized zone. We have to have the formalities. That's the important thing. And the next formality, Graham, is Coconut Tree or Montego Bay. Are you going to go for the Humble Bums or Bobby Bloom? That's Montego Bay.
Montego Bay, yeah.
So the Humble Bums, I'm afraid, have actually sort of struck out once again. Never mind. It's understandable. And this will get... I mean, we talked about the other one being toe-tap and being tantalisingly wonderful. This is just even more awesome.
Oh, a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way.
I wonder if Bobby had actually just forgotten what song he was singing when he came out of that and thought, ah, oh, just to break into some Rodgers and Hammerstein. Oh, well, from the world of podcasts, and you may be listening to this as a podcast or live, who knows? Why am I telling you this? Because Bill Clinton and Chelsea Clinton have actually started a podcast. Honestly, everybody's doing a podcast these days. But why am I telling you this is the title of this engaging, unexpected gem, apparently, according to Entertainment Weekly, from former President Bill Clinton and daughter Chelsea. They can, of course, join the Midweek Drive, should they so wish, because at the end of the day, the Pierce family have done that, and they will continue to do so because they're locked into wonderful, marvellous things, including the critique of the programme, which is going to fulfil the Phil Leonis slot, because fingers crossed and sending positive prayers, Phil Leonis will probably have had his eye operation by now and will be joining us again when it's midnight in Los Angeles, 8 a.m. tomorrow morning for the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. There, that's all our duties done and fulfilled. I can rest for a moment, Robin Pearce, and say, Robin, welcome to the production.
Thank you. How are you? What a song that was, eh?
Thanks.
I mean, it's a good thing that the webcam wasn't on, because I wouldn't have liked to know that you were watching me sashaying in my swivel chair.
It's a way of keeping the bubble of life happy and positive, because Lord knows somebody has to.
It's just about the Clintons getting in on the Pierce family. You know, that was shtick.
Well, that was...
The
that
parent
was,
and the child.
Yeah,
what's going on here?
That was why it caught my eye, and I thought, okay, it's given a full plug, because obviously podcasts are being recommended more and more by our friends in mainstream media, and the line is, the Clintons' knack for conversation forecasts the future with a gamut of guests, from celebrity philanthropists to basketball players to the owner of the Stonewall Inn. So that's Bill and Chelsea.
Monica Lewinsky?
Do you know, these are the kind of things, that's in the same department as not asking Billy Fires why she was upset about being asked about her wedding. You know, you just got to step away from those kind of things and maintain a certain veneer of professionalism. Or in my case, ask yourself, what would Hal Jordan do in this instance?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What construct would he come up with? Probably a gag for me.
Well, there you go. Or the dog. Boo! Woof, woof, woof! Boo!
Ah, yes. That wasn't actually rehearsed.
No.
Because I was talking about my disdain for the whole Conjuring universe. And the closest I could get to a jump scare on a podcast was to shout boo. And of course, I'd forgotten because
the dog went wild.
I forgot that the dog was right beside me.
Anyway, so where would you like to actually start with today's little production? Fergus is obviously with us in the studio. You've got Nigel pulling, you've got the robotic Chinese professor. You've got, I'm not saying he was robotic, obviously. He was just
well, you know what? Where else in 90 minutes of pure, unadulterated, radiophonic bliss can you go from robots to country music to roughage to wacky races to relationships to the eve of destruction?
I feel that in many ways we are almost becoming Netflix exclusive. By the way, when did the Pierce relationship actually become Netflix exclusive, by which you will only watch Netflix things at the same time?
I think my marriage is on the rocks. Because we watched the first season of the Santa Clarita Diet.
Yes.
And then I found out that Mrs. P had been watching season two.
No. Oh no!
Behind my back.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let it go.
Abandoned.
Breathe. Let it go.
I felt betrayed. I cried into my pillow. All
you said, Harley Quinn, help me. And you got a psychotic psychologist coming on board. No, it's Hayley Quinn, honestly. She must know. Surely she must know.
Well, you know, dating, this whole modern thing, I was listening with great interest because none of this was around when...
We were lads.
Pia and myself were courting. Mm-hmm. Did they even call it courting, did they? Mm-hmm. Who knows? But, you know, we've been married for 30 years, so...
Something must have worked.
Something must have worked.
Exactly.
She's very, very, very tolerant.
Huh.
You know, joining in family WhatsApp chats What's that all about? Watching Netflix together as a marker of commitment. Yeah. Well, she blew that one, didn't she? Joint calendar. We have a joint calendar. You know, she'll ask me, what are you doing today? And that's about it. Sweating together in the gym. Well, to be honest with you, you know, after 30 years of marriage, my gym time is my personal reflection time.
Exactly.
And I will perspire alone, thank you.
Sharing your phone's PIN, online account passwords, joining messaging groups with the in-laws, just some of the signs of a committed modern relationship.
Please, stop giving her ideas. She's listening in the other room. Maria, he doesn't mean it. He's just pulling my leg, okay?
So progressing. Anyway, where would you like to take us for this little review? Before we start talking about what I would have to say is, for my mind, probably equal with respect to Avengers Endgame Part 2, or the final part, in terms of quality.
Let's get the overview over with first, shall we? Robotics, again, listened with great interest. Because, okay, I don't come at this as a scientist. Because I'm not a scientist. I'm not qualified in anything. I'm not even qualified to write for Starburst, for crying out loud.
Come now. You know, I was already thinking...
Sci-fi fan.
We're about to launch a brand new podcast in 2 or 3 weeks' time. We recorded the first one today with real scientists. We're calling it From Molecules to Mountains.
I like that. Oh, that's catchy.
Well,
that's clever. I see what you did there.
Exactly.
But we're talking about robots, and okay, we are not as far along as we were supposed to be if we were going to believe the likes of the Colossus from New York. Remember that?
The Forbin Project.
The Forbin Project as well?
Yes, and the Colossus of New York. Or indeed, Colossus, the Forbin Project. But there's other things as well.
Indeed. I preferred the Colossus from New York, especially when he storms the United Nations at the end and starts blasting things with a death ray from his eyes that we never even knew he had.
Spoken like a true Godzilla fan.
But, of course, we then have, you know, Robot B9, because we started blasting people off into space in 1990, I think. As Terminator has shown us, you always run a risk when you create something that's smarter and stronger than we are. And it's a good question, I think, and, you know, a real-world question. How long before these things become self-aware and see that they are superior in strength and intelligence and we are nothing but vulnerable nuisances, and they want to do some pet extermination over the real bacteria on this planet, which is the human race.
Professor Yang, are you listening? I mean, even the name sounds a little bit sinister in many ways. I'm sorry, Professor Yang, but really, you know, if you had, my name is Professor Yang, and I deal with robots. You know, it's very tempting, but I just stepped away from that, really. Still, at least I didn't mention it was sponsored by Huawei. Only kidding.
Who are we? Well, you're Alex, I'm Robin, he's Fergus.
Nicely done. Yeah. Carry on, Robin.
Okay. What a trip down memory lane with Zoe Jameson, the Wacky Races, and Penelope Pitstop. Because I remember watching those on the BBC in the late 60s.
Help.
You know, I mean, now they form part of my son Steve's ever-growing Hanna-Barbera collection.
Surely, Disney have done it. Yeah, Disney have done it with theirs. Isn't it time we had live-action Hanna-Barbera routines? I know Wacky Races was loosely based on from Monte Carlo or Bust and the various other things at the time, but you know, do we not need a live version with Dick Dastardly and other folk within that? Surely.
There was, I believe, an Audi advert which had a real life Wacky Races and lookalike.
I just couldn't.
It plays on YouTube and it's absolutely amazing, so they could have done it. And of course, we're getting a real life banana split than as a horror movie, aren't we? Have you heard of that?
And that's another Conjuring, surely. You know, la 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 la. If only the Treochi male voice choir from the Valleys had actually done a version of the Bananas the Dirt Splits theme, I feel the cultural world would be just a little bit better. Never mind, it's still there.
Well, it might be, might be. So, all in all, what a show! I have to say that I did enjoy the dating part, mainly because it's left me mystified as to where the human race is going. But the star of the show this time would be you for pulling all this together.
Wow.
I give it to you this week.
I'm blushing all over, and your reward, because it's a shared team scenario, is to identify this particular TV theme. Fergus, I suspect not a clue.
No.
Not a clue. Okay.
Not the foggiest.
Can Robin Pierce help us?
I reckon we are on an animated superhero show.
Yes.
I want to say a Batman show from the 60s.
No, not from the 60s.
70s.
Not quite from the 70s.
Okay. How badly have I messed this up?
No, you. When you said a Batman show, I thought, whoa, very, very good. Yes, and you're right. Definitely a Batman show, but from this century, I think you'll find. From this century.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
Oh, it's not the Batman, is it?
Well, no.
The Brave, the Bold.
The Brave and the Bold. You got Batman with Elongated Man, with Blue Beetle, with all the DC characters being brave and bold in an homage to the comic of the same name.
I've gone and bought all those horribly expensive, because the limited edition, Shirley Walker Batman Animated Series sets, the CDs. Had you played the first couple of notes of that, I'd have been on it like white on rice.
I was tempted, but then I thought I'd just take it a little bit off tangent for a moment and just test that, because, you know, I was just devastated that Green Arrow, Green Lantern, nor Black Canary were actually highlighted as best superheroes in the sort of three challenges that were actually there. And let us say God Loves, Mine Kills, The Death of Captain Marvel, and probably Watchmen would have been best graphic novels, but there we are.
Oh, right, yes, yes. Yeah.
I just roll that out there. Anyway, moving on to, yes, a movie that Fergus has not yet seen because he went to see Diego Maradona and followed that through with Yesterday, which I might grow to love Yesterday, but I'm afraid I just felt manipulated. I somehow felt used in a Richard Curtis way when I came out of Yesterday, I thought. It's kind of like to rom-coms what Godzilla was in terms of I needed to cleanse my brain. And when I actually saw the trailers in this particular cinema for Terminator, my heart began to sink. I thought, well, you know, Linda Hamilton's nurse.
She's trying too hard.
And then we also got the next or the latest installation of the Fast and Furious. I'm thinking, oh, another Fast and Furious. But then, actually...
Before they became Mission Impossible, yeah.
Yeah. Although, if they weren't that, no one would watch them.
There's only so much you can do with illegal street racing, I suppose.
But in the words of Dolly Parton, I will always love you. And suddenly the world took on a much brighter and more wondrous place when we started working in terms of Far From Home, a movie which actually we will use as the backing music for you to consider the joys of Magical Mysterious Tour. The magical mysterio tour. You see what Michael Giacchino actually did with that? You know, the joy of the magical mystery tour. Mysterio tour, even. So, was it an exceeding of your expectations in the classic Starburst writer's way, expected and then actual?
Yes, it was indeed. I had seen the trailers and I was expecting it to be largely an epilogue movie because the story really had been told in Endgame.
Mm.
And I was wondering, where could they possibly go now? Is it just going to be Peter Parker moping over the death of his mentor, Tony Stark, in Endgame?
Mm.
It wasn't.
No.
I was a little bit disappointed that a scene which I found delightful in the trailer didn't make it to the film, where Spider-Man has defeated what appears to be bank robbers or something because they're webbed up all over the place, and the NYPD come in and he kind of cockily tells them that, you know, are you going to be the new Iron Man? I said, no, I'm too busy doing your job for you. And that wasn't in the film.
Wait for the DVD extras.
Well, yeah. And I was also a little bit wary about what they do with Mysterio, because Mysterio, I've always liked Mysterio as a Spider-Man villain. I think he was possibly the first one I ever saw back in the 60s. And, you know, could they get him right? Would he have the big dome? Would he have the big cape? Would he have the eye things? Would he have the smoke and the big gloves? Because, you know, as an arbiter of fashion, that guy was snappily dressed. Even more so than Electro with his little lightning bolt mask, which we never got to see. I was delighted that it was a modern retelling of Mysterio's first appearance in the comics, The Menace of Mysterio, and a later John Romita-drawn tale where Spider-Man believes that he's been miniaturized in an amusement park thing with all these hollow cubes.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found the whole story so, so good, and it worked so well with a slight redoing of Mysterio's origins from what we saw back in the 60s to one that makes a lot more sense, I thought. And some of his crew being somewhat peripherally familiar to us also worked very, very well. In fact, the whole film, for me, has inspired me to go back and start rereading Spider-Man from the first issues. Something that I haven't done for about 18 years since I saw the first Tobey Maguire film. And I thought, oh, that is so Steve Ditko, I've got to reread all my old comics now.
Exactly. And the fact that your son actually denied all knowledge of John Romita on a podcast, I thought was just shocking. But having said that, there's no excuse for actually threatening your son with a microphone in the eye. That's not going to help. You know, violence never solves anything. Just ease back from that.
Keep them focused.
Yeah. But again, we want to steer away from the eye lines quite clearly because Phil Lewis is having eye issues at present, so you don't want to go down that way.
Absolutely. Fergus, get well soon, Phil.
Yeah. Fergus, does this appeal to your good self? I know you, I mean, because part of the actual course structure, I took Fergus and some of his colleagues to see Captain Marvel earlier this year.
You did.
It's sort of important to educating the postgraduates of the world, so that's important. Black Panther obviously was part of the staple.
The first
one you actually seen. Are we weaning you into this line of saying, yeah, I will check out the epic Spider-Man Far From Home, the first Spider-Man motion picture set not in New York, not solely in New York, but abroad?
I am encouraged to see it because I still want to see Homecoming first, but I do like what they're doing with the character. The fact that they're focusing him just as like a young guy in
Bitten by a radioactive spider. Fancies an actress who's got massive numbers of social followers. You know, it's all about.
And I mean, I remember watching all the first one, went to see the Tobey Maguire ones and loved the first two of those. Not talking about the third one. And then with the Amazing Spider-Man ones, being so disappointed by those, where the only good thing seemed to be the relationship between Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone, which was reflected on screen as it was in real life, which is very good.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like the idea of Mysterio and the fact they focus on the smaller scale. Spider-Man's not going straight to the Green Goblin, straight to Doc Ock. I think Jake Gyllenhaal, good choice. I mean, I thought he could have been Spider-Man.
He could have been Spider-Man. Yeah.
I always thought he could have been the Joker. You know, because he's got that long face and he can twist it to a smile, can't he?
I thought it could have been Batman. I was pushing him to be Batman before Pattinson got it. Yeah,
our Pats. Yeah. Well, you know, this to me, Adam West always really set the bar for that point of view. Mm. I'm sure we'll be looking down for that.
But did Adam West have his special Batman voice like Christian Bale?
He just needed a lozenge, that's all that he needed for that point of view. In the words of Richard Vince Williams, it was mumbling from that point of view. But it was looking good, and I'd give it 10 out of 10. I think. I mean, I was looking for the Stan Lee thing. There is a very... that we did have, and I was wondering actually, Robin, did you in your own theatre have about half the audience decide to walk out at the end of the whole piece without waiting for the two final end credit pieces?
That's the part where Steve and I just sit there going, losers, 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 amateurs, newbies, tourists.
You know, I mean, apart from the fact that, as I said, you know, the Skrulls say no more, but Skrulls.
With the end credits thing, I remember when I went to see X-Men Dark Phoenix recently and didn't particularly care for it. And I remember sitting there at the end, me and a few, I guess, teenagers behind me, and we were just waiting for the end credits, there was nothing.
I was thinking,
surely after the quality of that film, you have to give us something.
give us some reason to remain here.
For all this time to look all these people who've done a very good job on this film, despite the quality.
But fair play, Sophie Turner almost acted.
she gave about a little over a half-hearted performance.
I would still take a Dark Phoenix any time over Godzilla got King of Monsters, but that's another line which we'll have to...
Oh, here we go.
Exactly. Despite
you're not going to start this when I'm actually in the studio with you in a couple of weeks.
2 weeks from now, you will be here in person, that's it. But,
I will.
I know James Perkins actually gave a 9 out of 10 review, and Christian Bone in Starburst actually only gave a 5 out of 10 for Dark Phoenix. Well, Christian, I'm sorry, but we have a bone to pick with you. I didn't say that. Never mind. So it goes. You can find the full reviews plus some of Robin Pierce's awesome writing as well in the world's longest running magazine of sci-fi, horror and fantasy. That's Starburst, the 80s issue, is currently out and about. Do you know, it's just been plug after plug today. It's honestly just shamelessly putting
it
together.
Well,
there we are. Well, you know, I've always been impressed with Jordan's Man from U.N.C.L.E. poster at the back of the office. I mean, that's very impressive. The sort of Ilya Kuryakin and Robert Vaughn.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Very classic.
Yeah,
very
the
classic.
One with all the pink smoke and that big glass desk of his.
Precisely. That's what it's all about. Tomorrow morning, it's a special on the Newark Literary Festival. We'll be talking to a range of writers within that. We'll hopefully be speaking to Phil Leonis post-eye surgery from Los Angeles, Gabriella Peralta from Gibraltar, Richard Fitzwilliams. Is he going to be doing... he's going to be doing, a bit ahead of his own trip to New York, he's going to be doing Don't Look Now. I think he's just taking the Michael out of Phil's eye surgery personally, but never mind. Sorry, Richard. Ian Lennox is with us as well. Sarah Bullimore and Dr. Ellie Cannon will be talking about the various challenges with our health, etc. And we've got a premier blogger called Kate Lever with us, as well as author and writer Maria Djedjan, who will be with us too. Thanks to the team today. Just the one soul in the studio. That'll be Fergus Jeffs. Online, of course, the range of sort of folk have been immense, as we'd expect from Nigel Pulling. Not a single mention for the Yorkshire Agricultural Society from our Welsh correspondent. Nigel will be very sad about that.
Mm. Oh, I am. Sorry.
He pulled out all the stops and the spots, and I'm just going to actually sort out my sort of connection of the English language and uttering words in some kind of coherent sentence in a few words. Tessa Snott, of course. William Coles, if you're wondering, was in a no-go zone when it came to connecting with technologies. Yeah. He just wasn't there. I think it's some kind of technological thing he was having. Zoe Jameson, of course, or Penelope Pitstop. Graham Harper finally got to us. And, of course, Billy Fires. No mention about Billy. Bless her. Thank heavens, I'm sure the whole PR agency was saying that they had a nutritionist sitting by her, because they could have gone anywhere with that one. And Hayley Quinn, of course, also well. Thanks to you, Robin Pierce. That's it. We're pretty much out of here. It's the Siren Cinema Show with Patrick Adams and friends coming up after the news. So we simply have to wrap up with a final hail and farewell. What should we actually say? We can't say Avengers Assemble. What's the Spider-Man catchphrase? We could know Excelsior, not really. Is there a catchphrase for Spider-Man? I know he's friendly neighbourhood Spider-Man.
I think he just says friendly neighbourhood Spider-Man.
He's your friendly neighbourhood Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It's not really a catchy one, though.
Yeah. Well, maybe we could actually write something into the whole sort of system that is there. But anyway, never mind. Let's go back to the prisoner. It's not too far away, Port Marion, from where Robin lives. So let's just say, be seeing you. One, two, three. Be seeing you.
Be seeing you. She is wrong and she knows.